Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Framed ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
Last time on Framed.
Do you know anybody that would want to hurt Brian?
This is what I think. He was dealing with drugs.
Where was Brian getting his pot from?
What I heard is Mario.
Your name is Mario Cachero.
Yes.
You're a drug dealer, aren't you?
No.
Are you aware of any disputes or disagreements Brian may have had with any of the other stock boys?
Brian definitely didn't like Rob because he was stealing alcohol from the store. We were trying to catch Rob in the act so we could get him fired. Also, since Brian's gone missing, I've heard that Rob owed him money.
Rob, I don't know if you've been told about some of the evidence against you. Your thumbprint was located on a handle of the cooler in blood.
This is your host, Aaron. At the end of our last episode, we learned that the fingerprint placed in blood on the produce cooler's door handle belonged to Rob Render. For those who subscribe to the Rob Render theory of the crime, this is Exhibit A, the most important piece of the puzzle. Some of you may have already made up your minds based on this piece alone, but I would invite you to consider this. 12 jurors heard about the bloody fingerprint and who it belonged to, and they convicted someone else of the murder. There is more to this case than meets the eye. The location where this crime occurred presented some problems for the detectives. Both suspects in this case were employees of the grocery store where the murder took place, so any evidence placing them inside the cooler doesn't prove definitively they were involved with Brian's murder. When Rob testified before the grand jury, they asked him why his fingerprint was found on the cooler handle in blood. Rob's response was that he probably grabbed the bloody handle when Mario's father asked him to clean up the cooler the following morning. So Rob did have a reasonable explanation for why his fingerprint was found at the scene. Later this season, we're going to examine every drop of blood that was found inside of Vail's Foods. The forensic evidence in this case will certainly help us explain what happened, where it happened, and potentially who was involved. But it can't tell us why this happened to Brian. On this episode of Framed, our focus is going to be on motive. Who had reason to harm Brian Carrick? Last week, we told you there were only two suspects in this case, Mario Cachero and Rob Render. Then we told you about Shane Lamb, a career criminal who happened to be employed as a stock boy at the grocery store at the same time Brian disappeared. You may be wondering why we didn't include Shane on our list of suspects. I'll take a moment now to explain our reasoning. What it boils down to is this. Shane was under the detective's magnifying glass for a decade, and they were never able to uncover any evidence that independently attributed a motive to Shane. They concluded that if Shane was involved at all, it was because of Mario. Absent any evidence to the contrary, we're going to follow the detective's lead here. We see Shane as more of a cog in the Mario theory, rather than as a standalone suspect. In the early stages of the investigation, Mario told the detectives that he heard Rob owed Brian money. He also told them that Brian was trying to get Rob fired for stealing alcohol. Rob, in turn, pointed the finger back at Mario. Rob told the detectives that Brian was dealing drugs and that Mario was Brian's supplier. We're going to look to the case file for corroborating evidence to support these claims about motive for both Mario and Rob. To do that, we're going to jump around quite a bit from witness to witness. And just so you're aware, we have already altered some of the witnesses' names for obvious reasons. Some of the witnesses you will hear from today were also working at Vail's on the night of December 20th, 2002. We will circle back to those witnesses in the coming episodes to cover what they remembered from that night. But for now, our focus will be on motive. We'll start with the testimony of Amber, a friend of Brian Carrick. Patrick Keneally was the assistant state's attorney asking the bulk of the questions at Mario's second trial. He asked Amber the following questions.
Good morning, ma'am. Would you please introduce yourself to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury?
My name is Amber.
Okay. I want to bring your attention back to 2002. Did you know a guy by the name of Brian Carrick?
Yes.
Okay. What was your relationship with him?
We were in the same class, friends.
So you were in high school back then?
Yes.
Let's talk about December 20th of 2002. Did you see Brian at all that day?
Yes.
Okay, and tell us about that.
We went to his house after school that day.
Okay, who is we?
Me and my friend, Jenny.
And why did you go there?
We were going there to buy a bag of pot.
All right. How did you know that Brian Carrick had pot to sell?
I guess it was just kind of common knowledge in school. We had gotten it from him before.
Okay. And about what time did you two go to Brian Carrick's house?
I believe it was around 4 o'clock.
All right. And would you tell us about the transaction?
We just drove to his house, pulled up into the driveway. We never went inside. He came outside, spoke with us for a little bit, and then we left.
Okay. And did you receive marijuana from Brian?
Yes.
How much?
To be honest, I don't remember exactly. We probably spent $30 or $40.
There are several facts in this case that are disputed, but the fact that Brian Carrick was a drug dealer isn't one of them. This is something all parties were in agreement on. Amber was just one of dozens of witnesses that could have been called to testify that Brian was dealing. I think the reason they chose to call Amber as a witness was because she bought from Brian on the same day he was killed. The prosecution could have called two other girls named Jacqueline and Emily, who told a similar story to the police. Also, on December 20th, 2002, around 6:20 p.m., they pulled into the Carrick's driveway and bought some weed from Brian. So it's not as though Brian was selling a little weed here and there to a few people. As Amber said, it was common knowledge that Brian had pot to sell. Everyone knew Brian was dealing, and many of his classmates were buying. There was another witness that was called by the prosecution to testify to Brian's drug activity.
Sir, would you please state your name?
My name's Justin.
Do you know a guy by the name of Brian Carrick?
Yes.
Describe your relationship for the ladies and gentlemen of the jury, please.
Brian Carrick was my best friend Eddie's brother. That's how I knew him.
Did you ever have occasion to purchase marijuana from Brian?
Yes.
When did that occur in relation to his disappearance?
Probably 2 weeks beforehand.
Okay. How many times did you purchase marijuana from Brian?
Once or twice. I think I recall twice.
Okay. And how much did you purchase?
$20 to $40 worth.
Now, the second time that you purchased marijuana from Brian, did you pay for it up front?
I did not.
Okay, tell us about that.
Well, obviously as a high school kid, didn't have much money. I knew his brother, so he trusted me. He lent me a bag of weed, and I never got a chance to pay him back.
The main takeaway from Justin's testimony is that Brian was making sales on credit. There were several other people who owed Brian money for weed at the time of his disappearance. As the list of people who owed Brian money grew, so did the pressure he was under to collect. This was a key part of the state's theory. Brian wasn't collecting on his drug sales, which meant that he didn't have the money to pay back his supplier, Mario. To establish that Mario was supplying Brian with drugs, one of the witnesses the state called was Brian's older brother, Eddie.
Good morning, sir. Would you please introduce yourself to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury by stating your first and last name?
Edward Carrick.
Edward, do you go by Eddie?
Sometimes, yes.
Can I call you Eddie?
Yes.
Thank you. Brian is your brother, is that correct?
Yes.
And how old are you in relation to him?
1 year older.
Did you have a job at the time of December 2002?
Yes.
Would you tell the ladies and gentlemen of the jury what you did?
I worked at Val's Foods grocery store as a stock boy.
Okay. In December of 2002, do you have any personal knowledge as to whether or not Brian Carrick was selling drugs?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
He was my brother. We lived in the same room together. We talked about it sometimes. And some of the people he was selling these drugs to were some of my friends and acquaintances.
Okay, so where was Brian getting his drugs from?
Mario Cachero.
Okay, how do you know that?
Because I had also sold weed for Mario Cachero one time. I talked with Mario about it. I talked with Brian about it.
All right. Let's talk about you selling weed for the defendant. How did that arrangement work?
The arrangement we had, the one and only arrangement that we had, was he gave me a half ounce of marijuana and I was supposed to sell it. I gave him the money. He gave it to me for free, pretty much. I had to sell it and then return him the money.
Okay, and how long did you do that with Mario for?
One time.
Why only once?
It didn't work. It wasn't a good deal.
Okay, why not?
From what I remember, I'm pretty sure he wanted something like $500 for a half ounce, and I could only get $200. The quality was very low quality. Poor quality.
All right. Now, was Brian a skilled drug salesman?
No.
Would you tell us why not?
First of all, he had no, I don't know if you want to call it experience in drugs. And second of all, he was too nice to people. The people that he would give it to were like girls that he was maybe trying to impress, and other people, he would just give it to them for free with the promise that they would pay.
Eddie Carrick was in the best position to know what was going on in Brian's life. Not only did he share a room with Brian at home, he also worked as a stock boy at Bell's Foods. Eddie told the jurors that Brian was getting his weed from Mario. Beyond that, he knew how the arrangement worked with Brian because he also sold pot for Mario at one point. Eddie said that Mario gave him drugs to sell for free. Eddie would then pay Mario back his share after he sold the half ounce that he was fronted. Now, given Eddie's personal ties to the victim in this case, some have questioned whether his testimony can be relied upon. It's definitely something we considered as we reviewed Eddie's testimony, but ultimately, everything Eddie testified to can be corroborated by other witnesses. Eddie wasn't the only witness in this case who was selling drugs for Mario.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling t-shirts from a booth at your local farmer's market or dishing out handmade crafts online, Shopify's POS system manages it all. Unite your in-person and online business with a trusted platform that supports your retail hustle. Get started with hardware tailored to your needs, from payments on the go to full-scale retail setups, with round-the-clock support to keep your sales smooth as silk. Do the smart thing for retail. Go with Shopify. For a limited time, sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/Wondery, all lowercase. Take your business to new heights. Visit shopify.com/Wondery today. That's shopify.com/Wondery.
And now, back to the case file for our next witness.
State your name, sir.
Christopher Amen.
Now, on April 12th of 2006, you were convicted in McHenry County Circuit Court for manufacturing and delivering cannabis. Is that correct?
That's correct.
You're a convicted felon.
Yes.
Do you know Mario Cachero?
Yes, I do.
Are you and Mario friends?
I wouldn't say friends, no.
Let's go back to 2002. Were you friends with Mario at that time?
I guess somewhat. I mean, I wouldn't go that far to say we were good friends, but we were acquaintances and we definitely had communications. And, you know, we seen each other and did talk, but...
All right. Did you have a relationship with Mario?
Yes.
All right. Tell the ladies and the gentlemen here what your relationship with Mario was in 2002.
Well, the majority of it was just selling marijuana, you know, like things like that. It wasn't too much hanging out as friends and things like that. It was more just kind of business-oriented as far as marijuana sales went.
All right, now, tell us about that. You had a relationship where you and Mario were selling marijuana together?
Yes.
Did he ever give you marijuana to sell?
Yes.
Approximately how many times?
I couldn't tell you. A lot. Very many.
All right. Did you ever have an occasion, approximately sometime in October 2002, to meet Shane Lamb with the defendant?
Yes, I did.
Okay, all right. Tell the ladies and gentlemen of the jury about that meeting.
All right, well, let's see. Me and Mario were together, and he had mentioned that there's a new guy that he's been talking to that he's going to use to kind of be the intimidator or the muscle. I guess if his services needed to be used as far as intimidation or collecting money or, you know, roughing somebody up, anything along those lines, that, you know, his services were available to me. And that he was also going to be Mario's right-hand man. And I was to deal with him and whatever. And basically, that was it. Just that he was going to play that role and we were going to meet him. And me and Mario were driving around one day, and, you know, he was on the phone with him or whatever. And we pulled over at, like, a small park, I guess, in Johnsburg, and he was in another car, and me and Mario were in his car, and we jumped out to be, I guess, introduced to one another. And at that time, I found out that it was Shane, and we had already known each other. I didn't know that it was him until we met face to face that day.
You go and meet Shane, and you already knew him.
Yes.
How did you know Shane?
Just mutual people, you know, around town, parties, just kind of seeing him around. I knew some of his siblings from years earlier. I just knew him.
The important part of Christopher's testimony as it relates to motive is that we have another witness who can support the claim that Mario was dealing drugs. He also testified that Shane Lamb was Mario's right-hand man, his muscle. According to Christopher, Mario made it known to his guys that if they needed help enforcing their debts, they could use Shane. There was some evidence in the record that Brian intended to use Shane for that purpose explicitly. For support of that, we will go to the grand jury testimony of Jacob Keppel. Jacob was one of the stock boys who was working at Bell's on the evening Brian was killed. He testified to the following.
Could you please state your name?
Jacob Keppel.
Did you know a person named Brian Carrick?
Yes.
And how did you know him?
I worked with him at Val's Foods.
Did you know a guy by the name of Shane Lamb?
Yes.
What was your relationship with him?
I worked with Shane at Val's as well.
Approximately 2 weeks prior to Brian Carrick's disappearance, did you observe Brian have a conversation with Shane Lamb regarding who owed him money?
Yes.
Where were they when they had that conversation?
The back of the store near the schedule, near the receiving end of the store.
Was anyone else present for the conversation?
It was me, Shane, and Brian.
What did Brian say to Shane?
Brian was telling Shane that he was listing off about 6 or 7 people that owed him money, all in amounts of $30.
And did Shane have a response?
Not that I can recall.
Did you have any idea why Brian was telling Shane all the people that owed him money?
He did say something about Shane having Shane collect the money for him, but I took it more as like jokingly or a joke type thing.
When the state convened their first grand jury, they called Shane Lamb to testify. The state's attorney's questioning of Shane Lamb was as aggressive as their questioning of Mario, which you heard a little bit of during our last episode. They directly confronted Shane with their theory of the crime. They asked him if he attacked Brian in the produce cooler while he was enforcing a debt that Brian owed to Mario. Here was Shane's response.
I would never hit Brian. I used to look out for the kid. The most he ever got was a quarter pound of weed from Mario. That's $400. Mario and his family have money. That's not shit. That's why I try to tell the police there's no reason for someone to get killed.
When you say you used to look out for him, on what occasions did you look out for him?
Like, you had to know him. No one was going to beat up Brian. If he had a problem with somebody, he would have come to see me and I would have helped him out. But no one would want to fight him. He was a real nice kid.
You said no one would ever have to beat Brian up to get paid for drugs. You just have to talk to him and tell him to pay. Were you ever asked, or did you ever intimidate him?
Never. Brian had money. He used to work. That's all he did was work at that store, and he never really spent his money on anything that I seen. So he always had money. He never had to have anything fronted to him. He would have the money and buy. And if he ran out, he'd just buy some more, and he just started doing that too.
When Shane was called to testify before the grand jury, he said that Mario never directed him to harm Brian, and that he had nothing to do with the murder. Here's the state arguing why we shouldn't believe this version of Shane's story.
A guy like Shane Lamb is only going to implicate himself in a crime of this nature when he feels he has no other choice, when he feels he has something to gain. That's how this business of mine works, okay?
And here's Mario's attorney arguing why we shouldn't believe the story Shane told at Mario's trial.
So in addition to giving him a free murder, if you believe the state, what they do is, they say, here is what we'll do for you, Shane. We will give you 6. How does that sound? And we'll give you day for day, so you're out in 3. Do you think Shane Lamb has a motive to lie? Do you think he's bulletproof as to whatever he wants to say?
If Shane killed Brian, he had an incentive to keep quiet when he testified before the grand jury. If Shane didn't kill Brian, he had an incentive to testify against Mario to receive a lesser sentence on his pending drug charges. So whichever one of Shane's stories we highlight, someone will inevitably point out why Shane was lying when he gave that particular statement. That being said, there is something from Shane's grand jury testimony I think we can rely on. When Shane said that Mario was supplying Brian with a quarter pound of weed at a time, he didn't have immunity. Shane had nothing to gain by telling the grand jurors that Mario was a drug dealer, and there were several other witnesses saying the same thing. So when Shane said that Mario was dealing drugs to Brian, it's believable. There was another detail Shane provided during his grand jury testimony that I think is worth mentioning. Shane said that sometimes Mario would front Brian with weed, other times Brian would pay for it up front. So the question is, on December 20th of 2002, was Brian being fronted drugs by Mario, or did he pay Mario up front? This is an important question to have an answer to, because if there was no debt, then there would be no reason for Shane to be brought in to collect. If Brian was paid up with Mario, then the foundation for the state's entire theory crumbles. There were several witnesses who testified that Mario was dealing to Brian, but no one seems to know exactly how much was owed, when the debt was due, or even if there was any debt at all. Setting that issue aside for the moment, let's take a step back and try to draw some conclusions from what we do know. If you look at the testimonies of all the people we just heard from, I think it paints a pretty clear picture. There were multiple witnesses who testified that they bought $20 to $40 worth of weed from Brian and that he was making sales on credit. There were multiple witnesses who testified that Brian was getting his drugs from Mario. There were multiple witnesses who testified that Shane Lamb was available to be used by Mario and his dealers to collect drug debts that were owed to them. Buried in the police reports were more than 20 other witnesses who could have testified similarly. Mario, Shane, and Brian were all dealing weed, and they were all in it together. That's as firm a fact as you'll find in this case. To really tie all this together, here's a small portion of Mario's testimony before the grand jury in 2007.
What was your relationship with Brian Carrick?
Colleague, employee.
Anything else?
A friend.
Anything else?
No.
Did you ever sell him drugs?
I decline to answer that question.
The evidence from the case file certainly seems to support the state's claim that Mario had a motive. If Mario played a part in Brian's murder, we know one of the reasons why. Before we move on to Rob Render and his potential motives, there is one more thing we need to cover. Selling drugs wasn't the only illegal activity Mario and Brian were alleged to have been involved with. Right around the time Brian went missing, there was a rumor going around that an entire truck filled with Xboxes had been stolen. Just 5 days before he was killed, Brian was offering to sell stolen Xbox consoles for $100 each. One person Brian offered to sell the Xboxes to was a coworker named Dominic. Dominic worked in the meat department as a meat cutter. He told Brian he wanted to buy 10 of the Xboxes for Christmas presents. Brian told Dominic he would work on getting him 10 consoles and get back to him. 2 or 3 days later, Mario Cacharo stopped by the meat department and announced that he also had stolen Xboxes for sale, but he wanted $125 each. Dominic asked Mario if he was willing to buy 10, would Mario be willing to sell them for $100 each? Mario told him no. $125 was a firm price. This fact pattern raises a lot of interesting questions. Were Brian and Mario working together to move the stolen Xboxes, or were they competing with one another? Was Mario upset that Brian was undercutting him on price? It's easy to see how this could have led to a conflict between Mario and Brian, but it gets even more interesting. On the very night Brian was killed, Dominic decides to circumvent Mario. He called Brian on his cell phone around 5 p.m. and inquired about the availability of the stolen Xboxes. Brian explained that he had not received the Xboxes yet, but he would call if and when they came in. When the detectives asked Mario if he was aware that Brian was selling stolen Xboxes, Mario said he was. The detectives followed up by asking Mario if he was also selling stolen Xboxes. Mario's attorney, who was present for the interview, told Mario not to answer the question.
Do you ever feel like you're settling? For your foundation, that is. Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation doesn't settle into fine lines and wrinkles. With SPF 20 and moisturizing Pro Vitamin B5, this foundation not only provides medium coverage and a natural finish, but also protects and nourishes your skin. And the best part? The blurring sponge tip applicator makes application a breeze. Say goodbye to cakey, uneven foundation. and hello to a flawless, radiant complexion. Try our new foundation today and see the difference for yourself at amazon.com/instant-eraser-foundation.
We will now turn our attention to our other suspect, Rob Render, and look into his potential motives. On our last episode, we learned that Mario told the detectives that Brian was trying to get Rob fired because he suspected Rob was stealing alcohol from the grocery store. When Rob was interviewed by the detectives in 2008, they asked him this.
How about liquor, alcohol? Did you ever steal liquor from the store?
Oh, yeah. I stole liquor before, yeah.
From the store?
From the store, yeah. And how did I take it? Let me think, because I only did that one time and I took a lot. That was the night I got arrested with Dan. I didn't even take the liquor with me. I stole bottles of liquor. Wait, no. I did steal bottles of liquor and I went to a party. A kegger, yeah. Now I remember. A lot of people from my school were there.
How often would you steal liquor?
Just once. I only did it once. I know I only did it once.
Okay, but you brought a bunch of liquor to the party.
Like, two bottles of alcohol.
Okay, two bottles.
They were Southern Comfort, too. I remember that.
Did the word spread that, so Rob brought liquor to the party?
Yeah, I gave it out. I gave it out right away once I got there.
Rob said he was arrested the same night he was giving away shots of Southern Comfort. So I went on McHenry County's website, punched in Rob's name, and was able to see his arrest record. Rob's very first entry in the system showed a charge date of November 16, 2002. I clicked on the case number and was able to see the charges were for possession of alcohol by a minor. This has to be the arrest Rob was referring to. There was something else I noticed on the screen as I clicked through the online arrest records. Rob had to go to court to plead to the alcohol possession charges. The court date? December 20th, 2002, which was the same day Brian was killed.
Were you ever confronted about stealing liquor from Vail's?
Now that I'm not sure about. I think maybe. I'm not for sure, but now that I can remember stealing liquor, I think maybe.
Okay.
You know.
Would one of the people who confronted you, would that be Brian Carrick?
I don't think he would have said anything. He would have if he found out, because he was very... I know Brian. That was Brian's life, was that store.
Okay.
And he cared about the store, but I don't think that was... If anyone confronted me, it wouldn't have been him, because he never partied. He didn't go out to parties, and he didn't, you know...
So Brian never came up to you and said he had a problem with you stealing from the store?
No, not to me. Not that I can recall.
All right. Who confronted you about...
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I'm just saying it could have been, and I do think that someone did confront me, but I don't know who it was.
The reason the detectives were asking Rob if Brian confronted him about the alcohol thefts was because that was what they were hearing from other witnesses, and not just Mario. A stock boy we heard from earlier, Jacob Keppel, testified to the following before the grand jury.
Did you know Robert and Brian to argue?
There were a few times. Both Brian and Mario had approached me, and they informed me that they felt Rob was stealing alcohol and beer from Vail's. So they told me to watch out for it. At one point, I remember Brian confronted Rob about it. He said he knew he was stealing, that he had stolen alcohol in the past. And if he saw him again, saw him doing it, he would turn him in.
When was that, in relation to Brian's disappearance?
1 or 2 weeks before Brian's disappearance.
Do you know whether Brian ever went to anybody on the management staff of the grocery store to report Robert's theft?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
One of Eddie Carrick's friends, named Joseph, told the police something similar. Joseph didn't testify, so I'll just read this brief passage directly from the police report. Joseph advised us that Brian had caught Rob Render stealing from Vail's, and that if Rob got caught one more time, he would be fired. So, Mario, Joseph, and Jacob independently told the detectives that Brian was the one who confronted Rob about his alcohol thefts from the grocery store. This was something Rob denied during his interview in 2008. Something Rob did admit to was that he owed Brian money. They asked Rob about this debt when he testified before the grand jury.
Did Brian Carrick ever sell drugs to you?
Yes, he did.
What kind of drugs did he sell to you?
Just pot.
You owed Brian Carrick money for marijuana, correct?
Yes.
Is that a yes?
Yes.
How much money did you owe Brian?
It was a small amount, under $100. I don't know the exact amount.
Rob admitted to buying pot from Brian and that he owed him money for it at the time Brian disappeared. The only thing Rob seemed uncertain of was the amount. But look at what happened when Rob was asked the following.
Why didn't you pay him the $30 you owed him for him fronting you the pot?
Maybe because I wasn't allowed to have money. So when I had money, it means I could go get pot. I could go do whatever because I actually had money in my pockets. When I did have money in my pockets, I never wanted to give it up.
After saying he wasn't certain of what the exact dollar amount was, he's asked why he didn't pay Brian back the $30 he owed him. Rob doesn't offer any caveats in his response, and in doing so, he seems to be conceding that $30 was what he owed Brian. During the same line of questioning, Rob was asked this.
You owed Brian Carrick $60 because he gave you marijuana. True?
Yes.
Rob agreed that he owed Brian $30, and then he said he owed Brian $60. Well, which amount was it? For that answer, we'll go back to the grand jury testimony of Jacob Keppel.
At any time, did Brian tell you that Robert owed him money?
He never told me that directly.
Did you ever hear Brian confront Rob that Rob owed him money?
There was one time in the produce prep room in front of the cooler. I walked in and Brian told Rob, if you don't have it by Friday, it's 60. And then Brian walked out of the room.
When was that in relation to Brian's disappearance?
That was the week before Brian's disappearance. He was referring to that. He was referring to the Friday he disappeared.
So Brian said to Rob, if you don't have it by Friday, it's 60. And when he said Friday, that would have been December 20th?
Yes.
Which is the same day he disappeared?
Correct.
This seems to explain why Rob agreed to owing the two amounts. He owed Brian $30 for weed, and if he wasn't paid up with Brian by Friday, December 20th, 2002, it was going to double to $60. There was another stock boy named Tony who was employed at Bell's in December of 2002. He was never called to testify at Mario's trial, but he did prepare an affidavit subsequent to Mario's conviction. Tony stated the following in his affidavit.
About 1 week before Brian disappeared, I was working on stocking a display shelf near the front of the store with Rob. He was pissed off at Brian about owing him money. Rob told me he was going to jump Brian with a weapon, but he didn't say what kind of weapon he was going to use. Rob had a vendetta against Brian.
This fact pattern really doesn't look good for Rob. He had two motives that were both linked to the night Brian was killed. To be fair, the same could be said of Mario. There's some evidence to suggest Brian was indebted to Mario, and the very week Brian was killed, Mario and Brian were selling stolen Xboxes. They both had motives, and it seemed as though they both lied to or withheld information from the authorities. Could there be some explanation that involved both Mario and Rob? On our next episode of Framed, we're going to hear from the witnesses who were working at Bell's on the night of December 20th, 2002. Peter DiPiero was one of the employees who was working that night. We'll leave you with a snippet from a police report that was prepared back in 2002 documenting one of their interviews with Pete.
We inquired about my interview of Pete on December 26, 2002. Pete maintained what he had previously told me, that he didn't know anything. We then told Pete about the information we had obtained. Pete then told us that he saw Mario and Brian near the rear door of Vail's where the trash is taken out. Mario and Brian were arguing. There was hollering and a lot of arm movement. A third kid was present during this argument. This third kid was busy taking out the trash and wasn't involved in the argument. Pete could not hear what Brian and Mario were yelling at each other about. He returned to the meat department to clean, and they were still arguing when he left.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Framed ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today, or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.